A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program. Hope you had a good weekend and a good Monday as well. I'm glad to be back with you. I do not have my I voted sticker yet. I am heading to the polls after I finish today's program. In Virginia, we are voting on this redistricting referendum that would give the Democrats the power to gerrymander our congressional maps and give them a 10-to-1 advantage in Congress. I'll give you one guess as to which way I'm voting. Yeah, no big surprise there. I did not have an opportunity to go to the NRA annual meeting this year. I was not on the ground in Houston, Texas this past weekend. I was bummed about that, but I had some obligations that kept me here at home. But the next best thing to go in there is getting an after-action report from John Petrolino, Bearing Arms contributor, the Penn Patriot, and very pleased that John could spend some time with us today going over not just what happened on the floor of the NRA annual meeting, but more specifically what happened at the members' meeting, at the board of directors' meeting, as you know, the NRA tries to rebuild, quite frankly, after you know several years of declining membership, spending tens of millions of dollars defending itself against the New York Attorney General, the D.C. Attorney General in the case of the NRA Foundation, and then, you know, the battle, I think, over control of the board of directors and ultimately over the organization itself, a fight that I think continues to some degree as we are watching the litigation between the NRA and the NRA Foundation play out. So, you know, for those of us who care about the NRA's role in the Second Amendment community, who want to see a strong NRA going forward, I think these are issues we need to pay attention to. And I'm glad that John had a front row seat and is here to give us all the details. Take a look and a listen. John, how you doing, man? It's good to see you this morning.
Cam, it's great to see you, too. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. I appreciate you carving out a couple minutes of your very busy schedule. Just back from the NRA annual meetings in Houston, Texas. I was not able to attend this year, unfortunately. And this was your first NRA annual meeting, right?
It was. I was scheduled to go to the meeting in, I think it was 2021, and that was the year that it was canceled.
Yeah.
So I was ready to go. I had my bags packed, and of course it got canceled. And looking at the schedule, it doesn't look like I'll be to another one until past 2031. So we'll see the next time I end up there. My schedule changes, that'll be a different story, right?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that that you were able to make it this past weekend. I'm just curious. I mean, what were your overall impressions of the NRA annual meeting? Understanding you don't have any other previous meetings to compare it to.
Right. So if I were to compare it to, say, like something like the Great American Outdoors Show in Pennsylvania, I'd say like the outdoors show was like huge. Like it's massive and that sprawling. A lot of people. It feel like there was a ton of crowds, like we weren't walking, you know, shoulder to shoulder as we're going through the rows. And I walked the floor, the complete floor on Sunday, which was the last day. So maybe that's not really fair. And then throughout the weekend, I walked some of the floor. But the members meeting was on Saturday. So I went to the members meeting on Saturday, which I thought was really good. And then I spent most of my time on the voices of the Second Amendment row, and I banged out something like, I want to say 13, maybe 13 interviews. And of course I did a couple interviews myself.
It was
busy. It was definitely busy. There was a couple times where I didn't eat, not that I need to eat all the time.
it's tough. And when you're there and you're working, it is tough because, yeah, you want to get, you know, the folks down across the table from you so you can do the interviews. It does take some time to get from point A to point B, you know, and so, yeah, I'm glad that you made it through, without, you know, getting famished or passing out from a loss of food. You said that you did make it to the members meeting on a Saturday. You know, it's interesting to me, like, you know, I think when people go to the NRA annual meeting, they're not necessarily going for the sit down portions of the weekend. They did not have the NRA ILA Leadership Forum this year, which I thought was interesting. I know that Governor Greg Abbott was on hand. There were some folks there, Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche was there. Hmm. But you didn't have that, you know, the sort of big political pep rally, right, that traditionally takes place on Friday. The members' meetings that I've been to in the past, I mean, I won't say they're hugely attended. You know, there are clearly more folks who are wandering the floor while the members' meeting is going on than those inside the room. But what were your impressions of the right. members' meeting on Saturday? Because this was, you know, we just saw the election, I think, of a pretty pro-reform slate of candidates. It seems like the, you know, the old guard, quote unquote, is not in power of the NRA board anymore. Last year at the NRA annual meeting, I was there in Atlanta, and you know there was a lot of, participation among members who wanted to see reform efforts continue. So, what was the mood like in the members' meeting this past Saturday?
So, the members' meeting, and I want to say that everything that was said about things in general, at least from the board member side to the members and back, because there was back and forth on some topics, the board members almost across the board vocalized that their concerns are not about the current leadership of the NRA. So, and we're going to bounce around a little bit here. Everyone was reelected. So Bill Bakkenberg was reelected to the presidency, Mark Vaughn, first vice president, Rocky Marshall, second. John Fraser, there was a conversation about him retiring. He's going to be retiring maybe in 6 months. That was at the director's meeting where they discussed that. But he's been reelected. The treasurer has been reelected. The chief compliance officer was reelected, but they did go into a minor executive session to discuss that. And as they were discussing whether or not they should go into executive session, they probably said some things that should have been in executive session. So I'm not even going to say what they said. But there was some conversations there. It was kind of a contested election, so it wasn't straight up off the slate. They did, you know, elect, you know, off the slate, I believe. So I don't know what went on there. But everybody was saying that nobody's worried about the current leadership. Doug Hamlin was reelected, and then he reappointed John Comerford, Josh Savani. So everybody pretty much stayed where they are. And board members that had concerns about different things overall was saying, you know, we're not worried about this team. This team's a good team. They're a transparent team. They're doing what they're supposed to do, but we're worried about the future, right? So one of the big things that came up was a resolution. I think I shared it with you. And it was Ron Andring. Apparently he's brought this resolution up a couple of times. It's like a conflict of interest policy so that directors can't, you know, make money off of grift off of the association, which I think we could both agree is a good thing. I mean, yeah. I have, when you and I were talking about this the other day, I said, like, I'm 90% there as far as my opinion on the matter. You know, because I think that if there's transparency and like, if you're selling whatever for $5, usually getting a $3 profit, but you're going to make a 50 cent profit, but you're going to save the association millions of dollars. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we do in business, but you know, given this past, we can understand why there should be zero dealings, and I can get that. So I see both sides of the aisle. So that was like a hotly debated topic, and members, there was, you know, members that discussed that as well. And then the other thing that came up was the matter of the executive committee. So the executive committee consists of 20 elected board members, and their role was supposed to be able to handle association business in emergent situations quickly, because assembling 76 people together to conduct business could be difficult, especially mm-hmm. if you go back and you look at the history of the association. We're going back over 150 years, so that's not easy. So you had this, you know, executive committee. There was a change proposal for the bylaws. The bylaws committee apparently worked on this a lot. And they came up with making the executive committee made up of a couple of different committee heads, as well as two at-large directors who get elected. And, you know, there was some concerns among directors and members that that's consolidating too much power. But you read the proposal. I know I gave it to you, and it did pass, by the way. There's a lot of transparency built into it. I think the problem is they're trying to move things, it seems to be, in a very business manner, which, you know, is good to run the association like a business instead of just a gun club.
Right.
I don't think the NRA is just a gun club. Right. And you and I both know just trying to manage a small organization, it could be difficult with a few people, never mind 76. So this was like matters of being able to like sign contracts and get things done. And some of the concerns, again, were to undo these things, but a lot of it could be undone with a majority vote of the members, but of the board members, but the board, some board members expressed some, you know, apprehension with that, saying that, well, there's some things that might get done that just can't be undone. Once they're done, you know, once you've rung that bell, once you've entered into that contract, once you've done whatever, trying to undo certain things could be difficult. So at the members meeting, and again, there was some contention amongst some board members that were both for and against the measure, that had some things to say about this. And the floor was opened up. Bill Bakkenberg did not gavel like anyone down. Nobody was out of order in either of the meetings when I was there. I was only there half the day yesterday at the director's meeting, so I can't say for what happened after I left. But there's people I would have gaveled down, but you know me, I'm like a little bit more hot-headed than maybe Bill. So anyhow, he was giving an opportunity for members to voice their concerns about the bylaw change for the executive committee. And that was opened up, and there were some directors that were speaking out about it. And, you know, Bill was like, hey, I'm trying to give the members an opportunity for them to voice themselves. This isn't about the directors coming out here and standing here as a pulpit. Then there's directors that maybe felt slighted, saying, well, I'm a member too, so I have a right to say this. It's like, well, you're going to also discuss this ad nauseum at the directors' meeting. So I think my perception, I can't say, I haven't talked to Bakkenberg about this, and I might even ask him for some comment about it. It seemed to me like he just didn't want to waste the members' time with directors bickering back and forth about the measure when it should be about them voicing their concerns. And their concerns that we got were pretty much a same thing. It's a consolidation of power that they're worried about. And, you know, if you look at how the NRA is set up, all of these things, it's a representative republic within a representative republic. So, and I understand in the past it was able to be abused, but these are directors that are getting voted in by the members in the first place. So are they or are they not represented? And is that power or is it not consolidated? If you're saying that these directors pick this leadership group, which are the officers, and then the officers have a stake in who's also going to be involved in executive committee. I mean, there's a lot of things to unpack here. So that measure did pass, though, where the executive committee was changed from 20 members to the number. And I sent you the, you know, they changed it to where it was instead of two at-large directors, there's going to be four at-large directors that the body actually elects to that. And then there's a couple of directors that are ending up on there that are committee heads. But some of those committee heads are also elected by the board of directors. So it's not just a straight up, you know, the president's got this huge amount of power, you know. I think if they were looking for a future compromise and maybe, you know, going down the line, because they could change it again, it's just going to take a majority vote to change and undo, you know, see how it goes. So, and that was something that somebody counted out. He said, you know, we've got, you know, 1 year, two, four, we've got five more years looking at the current leadership structure of people that, they, you know, the members and the directors trust to figure this out, right? So, yeah. There was some skepticism, though.
Was there any talk about shrinking the size of the board overall? I mean, again, you talk about sort of the unwieldy nature of 76 board members. I know that this is something that did come up During the litigation, I think this was something that Judge Cohen had talked about, even shrinking the size of the board. I know that there was some discussion. No action was taken at the members meeting back in 2025 in Atlanta. Was this a topic of conversation over the weekend too?
I would say on the back end, and that's funny that you bring that up, because you have members clamoring for a smaller board. Well, if you're worried about the executive committee having too much power, that's what you're going to end up with if you have a smaller board. So that's a plan. They're trying to figure that out. And I think they want to reduce maybe the numbers, 30. I don't know. It was discussed. That's something that was kind of discussed, but not openly in the meetings. That's just conversation on background, right? So there's a plan that's going on, and what it is, I don't know. I'm not privy to it, but they're trying to build this out in stages. But I want everybody to realize they're worried about this executive committee. If we shrink the board, you're going to be consolidating power. So, how do you want it? And one proposal that a director spoke to me on background about was saying, should there be an operational board that does the business end? And then should there be a board that just handles like the shooting programs, and then almost set it up like a business board? And then the gun club, like the gun club stuff goes over there, the business stuff goes over there, and then they kind of meet somewhere. I don't know the answer, but they can't have it both ways. People can't complain about having too many people on committees. You need people on committees. And I think having rank and file NRA members on these committees is the right way to do things, because it's involving the membership. And that's something that was stated over and over again. If people want to participate in these committees, they're open. You can go. Phones were not bagged at the director's meeting. You could bring your phone with you. There was no signs that said no photography. There was no signs that said no video recording. The members meeting had no photography, no video recording. But they didn't bag phones. Nobody got gaveled down. As a matter of fact, the only person, it was at the very beginning of the director's meeting, Dennis Fusaro stood up and interrupted Bakkenberg while he was giving his opening remarks. I don't agree with that. And then a director did not agree with that as well. That director came up. He filed a motion to say, we're going to suspend any interruptions of the opening remarks. And that was voted on, just so Bill can finish his opening remarks. Now, some directors took that as a slight, saying, oh, now we're being silenced, we're being hushed. No, I mean, there's a portion for new business. And again, I haven't been to an NRA annual meeting, so I don't know how the director meetings usually go, but my understanding of Robert's rules and the way meeting dynamics go, there's a section for new business. There's a section to be able to discuss these concerns. Why would you interrupt somebody while they're giving their opening remarks? I mean, to me, that's what I'm saying. I would have gaveled somebody down for that. That would have been an out of order. Like, I'm talking, you'll have your chance. Don't worry about it.
Right.
And then also the matter of the report. So all of these reports are given to the directors that day or whatever. And even those remarks from Bakkenberg, the remarks from John Comerford, Josh Savani, and this is not a hit on those guys. I thought their remarks were great. Those could be pre-recorded remarks sent out to both the directors and the members. The directors can look at them a week or two in advance. They could get these reports a week or two advance and give them an opportunity to maybe do a back and forth where they say, hey, these are some concerns. And then they can aggregate those concerns, try to address just those concerns at the meeting, and then have dialogue instead of wasting people's time going over reports. But you know as well as I do, you hand somebody a report 2 weeks in advance, and where does that report go?
Right.
I was like, I've sat in meetings where I'm like, I sent you that report last year. Why are you telling me where's the report? I sent it to you.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have the answer, but it looks like it went very well. It was open. It was transparent. They voted to move all executive sessions to the end of the meeting so that people could stay as long as possible. The only time they went into executive session when I was there was, again, there was conversations about the chief compliance officer that, wasn't fit for people to consume.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was fairly fast. It wasn't like we were in executive session for 2 hours. They took care of whatever they had to take care of, and then they voted for him to continue on. So I think it's you're dealing with a very transparent board. These are people that want to do the right things. But I also understand the concerns from the directors and the members that are worried about power consolidation. They have a few years to figure it out, really, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think based on the previous regime, I think that is it's a valid concern. But, you know, I can say just from my own dealings with board members over the past year, you know, I think that the crew that is there has the organization's best interest in mind, does not have a particular individual's best interest in mind. And I think that makes all the difference. So I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear that, you know, it sounds like things were, you know, fairly well attended. I'm sorry that you don't get to go back for like another 5 years, but, you know, maybe you can put in a vacation request like 3 years out. Maybe I don't know how that works on your end, but
it doesn't. You know, life events that are like important, that's what you save them for. But I'd say, Cam, you're correct on everything you said. One thing you said that, though, you called some people old guard. One director came up to me and said, "That's a pejorative." And you use that word. I'm like, I really don't use that word. I quote people in using the old guard, and I quote the cabal terminology. That's not my use of that terminology. But Cam, you can't call them the old guard. You might hurt some feelings, and you know, you're damaging the NRA.
Huh. Well, I will take it under advisement.
You know how I feel about that. But overall, I think it was a great experience. I think the leadership team did a fantastic job. I think the directors did a fantastic job. And you know, the voices row was very cool. I've never had a booth before. And as you know, I'm not a podcaster. I'm a lazy writer. So I like to film my interviews so that, you know, I don't have to take notes. I mean, it is what it is. I'm fully transparent about that.
Now you've got like a year's worth of podcast material. Yeah.
I've got a bit of stuff. And then one other note was, a woman that was fishing for petition signatures. I just want to get this out there. I've actually got my ballot over there. I did not vote in the director's election. I don't vote in the director's elections. I don't participate in the nominating of candidates. I don't sign petitions. And this woman asked me to sign her petition. I said, no. And she was like, really? I said, yeah, no, I don't do that. Sorry. So I don't want people to think that I'm like playing any angles or anything like that. It's like, you know, just straight up doing what we have to do. If I'm going to report on this, I'm going to do so as ethically as possible, even if people want to accuse me of being unethical.
Well, I'm glad that you put that out there. All right, John, get some rest. Hopefully you get a few days back at home. And again, man, I appreciate all of your coverage and appreciate you joining me on the program today.
Cam, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My thanks once again to John for joining us on the program and for all of his reporting. Now, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. You know, if I had been in Houston, Texas this past weekend, I would have had with me my modern rugged bag here, and I would have had it full of my laptop and all of my gear, because you can fit a lot of stuff into this satchel, and it looks great as well. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship. And it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads or the convention center in Houston, Texas, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather. Modern style. Timeless durability. Packed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today. Even one that looks just like mine, maybe. At modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Wyoming, where a man who received probation for burglary is now facing another felony charge, this time perhaps involving coercion in order to get someone else's stuff. 23-year-old Wesley Arthur from Gillette, Wyoming, waived his preliminary hearing, bound over to a district court last week on charges of escape from official detention. Now, it was last February that Arthur was sentenced to 4 to 6 years in prison for burglary, which was immediately suspended in lieu of 5 years supervised probation. So even in Wyoming, you can find sentences where, again, individuals sentenced to prison and then the entirety of that sentence, never mind, I'm just going to put you on probation instead. And again, if, you know, supposedly if you violate probation, well, you got that original prison term that's hanging over your head. All too often, though, what we see is that somebody who gets a deal like that, they violate their probation and their probation gets extended. Maybe they go back to jail for like a month or two. But it, I would say it's rare for the entirety of that prison sentence, that original prison sentence, to be imposed on somebody once they get a deal like this. So anyway, March 25th of this year, authorities were alerted that Arthur had failed to return to, I guess, like the place where he was staying, where he was supposed to be living. I don't know if this was a, you know, a halfway home, if this was some sort of, you know, supervised residential program. But anyway, he didn't show up. That was on March 25th. The next day, police responded to the Budget Inn in Gillette, Wyoming, to help EMS on a call. A man was reportedly lying unconscious on the floor of a motel room. When they got there, they found that he had a severe head injury. EMS arrived actually shortly after the police did, began treating the man. There were two women in the room. They told police that the man's sister, who is also Wesley Arthur's girlfriend, had just dropped the man off in the doorway and then left. So they just dropped this injured guy at the door of a motel room and then take off. Arthur and his girl, and apparently Arthur was there. Arthur and his girlfriend told the two women that the man had fallen in the parking lot while trying to get out of a vehicle. Police reports indicated at the same time an officer saw two individuals walking away from the Budget Inn. He told them to stop so he could talk to them, but they looked right at him and then kept on walking. They actually split up. Another officer followed one of them, and then the original officer followed the second individual. One suspect, later identified as Arthur, tried to jump over a chain link fence underneath a highway overpass. The officer yelled at him to stop. According to the officer, Arthur walked towards the officer while messing around with an object in his pocket. Did not pull a gun or anything. Instead, when he was searched, a debit card was found with the unconscious man's name on it. Arthur said he had no idea what was going on at the motel. Said he wasn't coming from the motel. But according to the police report, he became more cooperative when he learned the police knew whose debit card he had in his possession. And then the story changed. Then it was, well, I was out with my girlfriend and this guy. We'd all been drinking and we ran out of booze. And so we went to McDonald's and then we went to another store. And then when we got back to the motel, wouldn't you know, my friend just, you know, falls flat on his face. So, you know, we took him up to the motel room and then we dropped him off and then my girlfriend and I left. According to authorities, after a fairly extensive investigation, officers determined that Arthur was telling the truth about this guy. Yeah. But when they ran Arthur's information, they learned that he had a full extradition warrant for escape. Whoopsie. And he was arrested. He was also on probation, as we mentioned. Not allowed to have alcohol or be around anybody who was drinking. And Arthur blew a 0.159 on a breath test, about twice the legal limit if you're driving. Remember, he's not allowed to have any alcohol whatsoever. Whoopsie, whoopsie. The staff of a local liquor store also reported, I guess this was the original burglary case back last year. When Arthur was charged with burglary, he apparently was charged with stealing alcohol from a liquor store at that point. Anyway, Arthur is now going back to jail. I would like to think that the terms of his probation will be revoked since he is now charged with escape from official detention. But we keep our eyes on this story because, again, that doesn't always happen. In fact, I would say in a majority of time that doesn't happen. And it is quite possible that Wesley Arthur, who got a heck of a deal on his first criminal charge, will continue to skate free of consequences in the future. On today's Armed Citizen story from Austin, Texas, where a woman chased an intruder out of her home during what she describes as a terrifying invasion. This was last fall, but Shayla Worley is just now talking about the incident. She said, "I grabbed my gun. I yelled at the man to get out of my house that I was going to shoot him." She said she realized that there was somebody in her home. She said, I could see them very quickly go in and out of every bedroom. She said, "I heard my front door open and close." And she said that she called 911 after she was able to chase the guy out of her home. But she called that experience, quote, "disappointing and confusing." She said that the operator asked her if she called police while the man was still inside. And she said the answer was obviously no. There wasn't a single second to pause and call 911. And so the 911 operator told her to call 311, which is the non-emergency number, and to file a report online. Basically, you know, listen, okay, the guy's taken off, right? The immediate threat is over. This is not an emergency call. So file a report. Worley said this shocked her, and she expected an officer to respond immediately. KXAN in Austin, Texas, submitted a public information request for the 911 call, but dispatchers, or I guess the 911 office, said that it cannot be released until the investigation is officially closed, and it is not. Austin Police Department confirmed that officers did arrest a man. A detective eventually responded in person to Shayla Worley's home. Chief Lisa Davis says, you know, you talk about one of the biggest, most traumatizing events, someone in your personal space and in your home. And the chief said she did listen to the 911 call that has not been released publicly, by the way. Said that Shayla Worley noted there was not an active emergency. But the chief said that the operator could have asked more questions about the incident to understand the gravity of the situation. Davis said, "I think it's just asking more questions on the other end, learning what exactly did occur, saying we're going to have somebody respond." And so those are the kinds of conversations we're having. She said, "Luckily, this case was resolved. We did make an arrest in it. But the point is how we got there. And did we explain it to the victim enough to make her feel confident, one, that we're going to show up, and that this case would be investigated by our burglary unit?" According to the online court records that KXAN found, the suspect of this case, a man named Robert Walters, has an arrest history going back a dozen years, includes several other burglary offenses. His next court date, I guess, is coming up this Thursday. Shayla Worley says, while she was not hurt in the incident, she said it took her weeks to be able to sleep through the night. She said, "You know, when I hear the smallest noise, or just my neighbor upstairs," she said, "I wake up in a panic thinking the guy's here, and I'm grabbing my gun and I'm checking my cameras to see if somebody's there." And these incidents, you know, they are traumatic. Even if nobody's hurt, even if you chase the guy out of your home, to have the sanctity of your domicile violated like that, it does leave a lasting impact. Now, I will say that I am very glad that Shayla Worley had a gun and that she grabbed her gun and that the guy took off. I don't know what would have happened had she not been able to protect herself. As to the 911 call, you know, I agree with the chief that, yes, dispatchers, you know, should be compassionate. They should make sure that the person calling in understands, you know, okay, well, here's what's going to happen. It's a guy left, so we don't consider this an emergency. But I also have a lot of sympathy for the 911 dispatchers out there. And, you know, they have a very, very difficult job. I don't think I could do it. We've obviously heard, you know, 911 calls before where dispatchers are just downright rude. They're mean. Don't know, again, about the circumstances of this. Maybe the, you know, 911 dispatcher could have been a little more empathetic. Maybe they could have been just, you know, a little more expressive in terms of, you know, relaying what was going to happen. I don't know. but I have sympathy for the dispatchers who have a very difficult job. You know, trauma inducing in its own way, dealing with the people who are oftentimes in the grips of a crisis or an emergency. And, you know, the only help you can give them is to send officers to the scene. You can't do anything yourself. That's got to be a challenge. I'm glad that Sailor Worley's okay. I'm sorry she had a bad experience calling 911. It would have been nice had the operator said, okay, I'm very sorry what you're going through, but I just want to make sure the guy's gone, right? Because if he's gone, we'll get somebody out there as soon as we can. But we don't consider that, or the police department doesn't consider that to be an emergency. So here's what you need to do in order to get somebody out to your home as quickly as possible. I maybe even would have asked, you know, do you have any concerns that this guy might be coming back? Do you have any concerns that this guy might be lurking around outside? You know, asking those types of questions might have elicited a response where, you know, it would have been justified under a department policy to send somebody out there right away. Thankfully, you know, ultimately no harm, no foul. And Sheila Worley, if nothing else, got a reminder that ultimately your safety is your responsibility. And you can call 911. Hey, there's no guarantee someone's going to pick up. I hate to say that, but I mean, we've got, you know, that situation in cities across the country. And B, as scary a situation as you might have gone through, yeah, there's no guarantee that, you know, someone's going to show up within minutes to your home. Frankly, even if Sheila Worley had been able to contact 911 while that individual was inside her home, it's still going to take time for police to respond. Even if that's a priority one call, you know, the average, I think, nationwide is about 8 minutes. And that's the average. So it could be longer than that. So our safety really is our responsibility. And I'm glad that Sheila Worley, at least on some level, understood that before she had to make that 911 call last fall. All right, finally, our good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, we were able to do the right thing. A gas station clerk in Detroit who was able to save a teenage girl after she was able to mouth the word help to him. This was, I guess, last week. The clerk, Abdul Raham Abu Hatem, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He was behind the counter at this gas station. 16-year-old girl comes in, and I guess the 48-year-old guy who is now accused of kidnapping her was with her in that gas station. According to police, the 16-year-old was waiting for a bus to school when 48-year-old Donald James Joseph Arthur Fields drove up, forced her into his van at gunpoint, and then drove away. Another student who saw what happened picked up her phone, called 911 immediately. While police responding to that kidnapping there at the bus stop, Fields is alleged to have assaulted the teenager in his van and then drove with her across the city line into Detroit. Officers showed up at the teenager's school. They saw and spoke with several students who were using their cell phones to track the missing girl through a social media app. The principal of the high school said the whole room froze when we realized we knew where she was. So they could tell that she was at this gas station. It was a Sunoco. So police are heading there. Fields and the teenager are already inside the store. Fields allegedly told the 16-year-old to pay for his cigarettes. And Abu Adam told WXYZ-TV that he was suspicious. He said, I stop and when there's something wrong. And he said, and then she mouth-talked to me, like with no sound, help. So he said he stepped out from behind the protective glass there at the counter, stepped in between Fields and the teenager, and he said, I kicked him out. He said, I told the girl, go behind me. Fields, who, again, was armed. I mean, he kidnapped this teenager allegedly at gunpoint. So I should say Fields allegedly was armed. Fled, and he was actually going back to his van. Abu Adam was following him so he could get his license plate information. And that's when police arrived, were able to take the suspect into custody, confiscating his van as well as a handgun. According to Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy, the teenage girl was the victim of a random attack. And Worthy praised the teen for keeping her cool even after she was assaulted, saying our young survivor in this case was simply walking in broad daylight when she was viciously attacked and sexually assaulted. Despite what she had just gone through, her quick thinking and mental toughness saved her life. We cannot reverse what happened to her, but we can work hard to bring justice to her. Fields has a lengthy criminal history. According to the mayor of Hamtramck, I'm probably butchering the name of that town in Michigan. I do apologize, but the Detroit suburb. The mayor there says that he is a, quote, criminal who had a history of rape charges. Most recently charged in February 2024 with criminal sexual assault and second-degree assault. Two arrests on his record for first-degree home invasion in Michigan. Again, don't know the outcome of those cases, but he very well could be one of our recidivist reports, sounds like. And again, thankfully, because of a lot of Good Samaritans, including her fellow students who, you know, started using that app to try to figure out where she was. And yes, Abdulrahman Abu Adam, who saw her mouth the word help. And that's exactly what he did. A number of people, again, deserve praise for their actions in saving this teenage girl from further harm. And we thank them all for their very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. So tomorrow we've got lawmakers in Virginia coming back into session for a day to deal with all of Governor Abigail Spanberger's proposed changes to bills, dozens of bills, not just gun control bills, but there are a number of gun bills, including the ban on so-called assault firearms, that she wants to make changes to. Again, the bill dealing with the ban on carrying so-called assault firearms implicated in this as well. So under the governor's proposed definition, any semi-automatic firearm would become a quote-unquote assault firearm if it is equipped with a magazine of more than 15 rounds, which means that a lot of individuals who are lawfully carrying a handgun for self-defense could find themselves facing criminal charges simply for continuing to use a 17-round magazine or a 20-round magazine that they lawfully purchased, that they lawfully possess, but that the governor says they can't actually put in their gun or else it becomes an illegal gun. Yeah. We'll be following all of those details throughout the day tomorrow, but we'll also be talking about it on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company as well. In the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com today for all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from not just across the nation, but really around the world. We were talking about the mass shooting in Mexico that happened on Monday. The mass shooting in Ukraine that actually is leading to calls to relax the country's gun laws, unlike what we see when there is a mass shooting here. People, we need more gun control. Well, in Ukraine, they're saying we need to be able to fight back. So we're talking about that and more at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you'll get some great benefits along the way. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.